Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I think we're going to have a lot of fun, and it's just really cool that you stopped by. I hope all is well in your world, and if you need anything at all, reach out to me, email me, Twitter me, whatever you want to do. Be happy to help in any way that I could. All right, this is a fun interview. So let's get on with it. Just 7 months ago, my guest was in the unenviable position that many of us have found ourselves in at one point or another. In the past, he had lots of ideas that seemed great at the start, and yet he had an equal number that had to be shut down for one reason or another. He'd had a lot of success with consulting over the years, but he wanted to build something bigger. Then he came up with another big idea. And on July 15th, 2017, he sent the very first email pitching a new LinkedIn outreach service called LeadCookie. Now, just 7 months later, they've grown from the first email to a team of 19 full-time employees, and they're generating $43,000 in monthly recurring revenue. Now, let's hack Jake Jorgovin. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by our friends at Typeform, the versatile data collection tool for professionals. Typeform makes asking easy and answering refreshing. Remember, how you ask is everything. And if you sign up for free today, you're going to get two things. First of all, you're going to get a special deal because you are a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, of course, but you're going to get to see Typeform in action, and it's beautifully stunning. Go to typeform.com/hack. Just look at the form. typeform.com/hack. Plus, you can sign up for free or you can get 30% off for the first 6 months. Once again, to sign up for free today and check out the beautiful form, go to typeform.com/hack. All right, before we get rolling into the show today, I want to just tell you quickly about Design Crowd. Design Crowd is a service that helps small businesses from dentists to accountants to photographers, personal trainers, and DJs to outsource or crowdsource custom graphics, logos, web design, anything that can be designed from designers around the world. Design Crowd has over 550,000 designers from Sydney to San Francisco ready to help you with awesome creative ideas. Get the perfect custom design every single time. To do this, go to designcrowd.com/hack because there's a very, very, very special offer for you as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. You're going to get a $100 discount from posting your very first project. Once again, go to designcrowd.com/hack. We're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on here, John.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. This is a cool story, what you've been up to and what you're continuing to get up to. So I'm glad to have you here.
Thanks. I'm excited to be on.
Nice. Should we jump into it?
Let's do it.
All right. Jake, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the one thing is probably going to have to be just resilience. Has probably been one thing of just kind of going resilience and constantly learning and just, you know, building off of those mistakes and failures. You know, this success here, it sounds amazing when you say, you know, when we say I built this company in the past 7 months, but it came from a lot of failures before that, a lot of learning and everything. So I would say, yeah, I think the resilience is one of the biggest pieces, and just learning from that and just growing off of that is, there's so many sub pieces of that. So many things you do learn along the way, but I think that aspect is probably just one of the biggest things.
So the resilience is dealing with like the ups and downs, or what do you mean in reference to that?
I would say in the bigger picture of like the entire entrepreneurial career that I've had, it is the resilience to go, yeah, the ups and downs, all the failed attempts I had at businesses before this that didn't work, and realizing that you're still going to power through, find some way to make it work, and then you're going to try something again in a few months, and you try something again. So that's, you know, one aspect of just the whole entrepreneurial journey. But then it's just like when you actually get into, like, even once Lead Cookie started and we're actually into the mix, it's just there's so many times where you're just faced with, oh my gosh, this is just a nightmare, or this is not working, and you start doubting yourself, or you start doubting your product and service. And it's resilience to kind of just like understand that that is this temporary thing. And, you know, one of the biggest things I had to remind myself early with our service was, okay, this customer is not happy, they're leaving, they're asking for a refund or something. That's not, that doesn't mean that we're going to fail or that everything's burning down to the ground. It just means that was not a good customer fit for us. And like just all those kind of things like that, and realizing to take those for what they are and just, you know, power through them. That's, you know, probably been a hard part, but just something you have to push through a lot.
Fair enough. And I want to get into Lead Cookie as this, but this, like, the story is July 15th, 2017, you sent your very first email pitching this new idea. As of last month, January 15th, 2018, you had hit $33,168 monthly recurring revenue with 15 full-time employees.
That is correct. And as of today,
that's the 7 months you're talking about.
That was the 6 month mark. We're now at about 7. We're recording this on February 28th, and we're at roughly 43,000. I don't have the exact number in my head in front of me, but about 43,000. And we're at 19 full-time team members with US and abroad team members. So that's where the kind of the update since that blog post went live.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so you're right. This whole idea of that 7 months, it's kind of staggering to look at from the outside. But you talk about sort of these failures beforehand. Did you say before July 15th, or can you tell me one of the times that maybe you doubted that you could even, I'm sure you've read blog posts like this, of where somebody does this, right? In 6 months or 7 months, they do some staggering amount, and it's just, it's impressive to watch. And you just get the feeling that that person, like, just everything they touch turns to gold.
Yeah, that is definitely not the case. Nothing turned to gold prior to that. So there's a lot of things that didn't turn to gold prior to this. And so, yeah, I guess, would you like me to share, like, just kind of what, like, those failures before this, or what would be a good context to get?
Let's do that.
Yeah, so one of the, I guess when I look back at this, and I've said this, you know, I think a lot of people that start their own businesses like this, they come out of this freelancing or consulting or the owning an agency or some aspect of that. And that's kind of the background that I came out of. And so the biggest failures that I kept having with everything I tried before was the service I was creating was always too tied to my expertise. And it was impossible for me to ever train anyone else to do what I was proposing that our service would be. And so, for example, one of these that I tried to scale up previously was this previous iteration called Outbound Creative. And the whole concept was to basically mail people physical packages. So it was the idea of doing like dream client campaigns. So instead of hitting out to hundreds of people, we go after companies that have like a deal to them is worth, you know, $250,000, $500,000. And we spend a good amount of money to mail these physical packages to decision makers to get their actual attention and book a meeting, which was really cool. And it was a cool concept. And actually, in retrospect, it might have worked if I had had the hindsight and the resilience to go, like, or just, if I knew what I knew now, I might have been able to actually probably make that one work. But I ultimately just struggled to ever separate myself from it because it was like these dream client campaigns. The messaging was so specific. It was just so much tied to my expertise. And as I tried to scale it, I realized I'm just really scaling my consulting and I'm never going to be able to step away from this. And so that was, you know, like one example of this failure where, I mean, we grew and we got up to 25,000 a month recurring 1 month, and then it just plummeted and crashed after that. So that was just like one example. But that, I would say that that was like a lot of the biggest failures I ever did before were tie it too close to my own expertise so I could never separate the service delivery from myself.
So meaning that you couldn't train somebody to do it as well?
Yeah. Basically meaning that I underestimated the inherent knowledge that I brought, that I couldn't train anyone to do what I was proposing that we were going to do, unless I was going to hire someone really expensive, and then it just wouldn't have been a cost-effective service to sell. So that was, I guess, kind of one of the biggest mistakes that I kept making in the past.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And then if you knew what you knew now, you said that maybe, so with resilience and maybe knowing what you know now, it's only 7 months later. So it's not like, I'm assuming you don't have some grand wisdom that you've gathered, but what do you mean by, if I knew what I knew now, it might have actually succeeded as a service?
So this idea of, so when I look back at this, and so our idea, like what our service was, is we would do these physical package campaigns. So we'd basically do 10 customers a month and we'd mail them like cakes with a custom URL on it that took them to a personal pitch video. We would mail them like pinatas. We did like crazy things. We sent Donald Trump pinatas at one time. This was prior to the election. And like we did all these elaborate, crazy kind of things to get people's attention. We sent like these hollowed out vintage books and it got people meetings. But what they struggled with is ultimately I was working with way too young of companies. And so they would get these meetings. I literally got this agency, like a meeting with the director of digital at Budweiser. And then they just flopped and like fell on their face in it. And this is where it divulged into my consulting. And basically I realized like, okay, I'm getting these people meetings, but they have no clue how to sell it. And the thing is with any sort of lead generation service, if your customers don't close the deals, they're going to blame you for giving them bad leads. Even though I got them a meeting with the director of digital at Budweiser, they're still going to blame you because they don't close it. It's like, so.
It's bad leads, Jake. It's bad leads.
Yeah. I was like, well, you just had a meeting with them. And like, clearly they like, you're just like, you're not ready to work at that level. So in like retrospect, I look back at that. And if I had known that same thing I knew now where it's like, okay, it's not that the service was bad necessarily. It's that it wasn't the right customers I was working with. If I went to way more mature businesses who had good sales processes, who could afford this and maybe didn't require as much of the personalization and expertise I had, then like it could have worked, you know? So that's kind of one of the things where just in retrospect, but you don't really know or see all these things until you look back at it in hindsight and you realized all the things you did wrong.
I think twice so far in the last 9 minutes, you've mentioned having bad customers.
Mm-hmm.
Is this, yep. Isn't a customer that pays you for the service that you are offering a good customer?
So, I mean, there's some services out there where they want every single customer they can get. And so we're a marketing and like lead generation service. And there is so many marketing companies out there that will just sell anyone who will give them money. And they're going to go tell you they're going to rank you on Google or, you know, do something or do inbound leads or content marketing for you or whatever. But I am a very big believer that, you know, in this marketing space and this lead generation space, if you want to create a service, you need to create one with integrity. And you're only going to take customers you can actually be successful for. And so with LeadCookie, we even do this 30-day money-back guarantee, so that way we only sign customers if they're going to be a good fit and we believe we're going to get them results. Just because I don't want to be the kind of person just hawking out something to anybody and they're not going to get results from it, and then we just churn and burn customers. We want customers where it's actually a mutually beneficial relationship for us. They get value out of it, we get value out of it, and it kind of goes both ways. So that's like a big belief that I have in business, or just philosophy or kind of value that we have around the company.
And it makes sense. And obviously it works because we can see the results of it at this point. So between closing down Outbound Creative and then sending out that first pitch email on July 15th, what was sort of the idea? Like, did you just think that that was a good service and you just had to find a better way to sort of tackle it? Or did you just randomly again now come up with the idea for LeadCookie?
Yeah, so this was basically after the whole Outbound Creative piece kind of failed. Basically, what I ended up doing was just custom consulting. So I was just working with agencies and consulting companies, running outreach campaigns, lead generation for them, just working on a custom consulting basis. And I did that for about a year and a half between Outbound Creative's like packaging phase dying down and then this LeadCookie starting up. And I started to go down the route of being an info marketer and writing books and courses and stuff. And I ultimately, at some point, I had this conversation with my wife where I was like, you know, this is just not me. Like, I wrote half this book and I've been sitting here for like ever not writing the second half because I'm not excited about it. I just don't think that this is the route I want to go. I think I'm ready to launch and build a big business. And just instead of writing a book about my skills, using the skills I have to build another business. And so at that point, what I did was I just kind of brainstormed and I sat there and I spent about 2 weeks in this process of just all right, let's not jump into anything. Let's like go into this with actual intentionality. And so I went through this kind of process of let's brainstorm all the ideas. Let's kind of do some research on the top ideas. And basically there's like a handful of ideas, but the one that, and how this started was just this idea of like LinkedIn specific marketing agency / service, I think is like some way that I just wrote it down on this mind map I did. And the whole idea was like, there's all these companies out there doing like these Facebook ads and Facebook services for people. I don't know of many people doing a LinkedIn service, but I know I get a lot of business whenever I'm active on LinkedIn. That was how it started. And then all I really did from there was I spent some time doing due diligence and actually researching. So I researched every ebook, blog post, podcast, article I could find on LinkedIn marketing tactics and like seeing what is working on LinkedIn. And I compiled a list of all the tactics. And then I just started to build a list of all the services out there that people were offering, like LinkedIn prospecting or marketing services. Like, what are the options out there? And out of that, I basically just kind of pulled the best tactics that I could find, some ones that were taught by people like John Nemo and Josh Turner and people like that. And I looked at what other people were doing in the space. And I said, you know, I think this LinkedIn prospecting, this outreach, there's an opportunity here. And I don't think there's people doing it, which is some validation that there's a business, but I don't think anyone's doing it great. And I think I could make the best LinkedIn prospecting service in the industry. And that was kind of how this all, that I guess that narrowing down came to be. And then at that point, that's when I started throwing up a basic landing page and pitching it to people in my network.
So did you go sort of, seems like you had the personal skills, you did the research into the market and then into competitors as for sort of validation of it. Did you go that deep into any of the other ideas before realizing that, no, that's not the right one?
I would say...
like, how intentional were you?
Yeah, I was decently intentional. I think at the beginning, I definitely did some research in the other ideas. I honestly can't remember too many. I know I had just come out of another attempt at another failed one prior to that, that I didn't do this due diligence on. I just kind of dove into it and tried to validate it, and it didn't end up working. One of the other mistakes that I made a lot in my career was always trying to like go completely blue sky and trying to create some completely fresh new idea out of thin air and just like some innovative business model. And that's like kind of really hard to do. And I think that's where a lot of people make mistakes. Like literally LeadCookie, there are other companies, like I said, I found like there's only like four or five out there that I really found that were really competitors in this space. But there were other people out there doing this and they had teams and I could tell they had customers. So I was like, all right, there's like validation. There are other people doing this. And I literally just kind of modeled after them and I'm now trying to do it better. So.
And it was like way more focused, not just within your criteria, but in the fact that it wasn't just like a creating something like completely out of the blue. It was, you're just trying to do a better version of what existed.
Yeah, that's basically. And I just like saw that. I thought there was opportunity here. I knew I had seen value. Like I tested all these tactics on my own account first, and I saw the meetings I was booking and the leads I was getting and the value I was getting just from my own personal consulting. And so I just basically modeled it after some of the other ones that were already out there. And that's, I try to tell this to other people now. It's like, don't try to reinvent the wheel. Just start something like modeled after something else or tweak an existing business just a little bit. I got a friend, Ian Horley, who runs hubsnacks.com, and all it is WP Curve for HubSpot, and he's doing great. Like it literally just took WP Curve, the entire model, everything, and swapped it out from WordPress to HubSpot, and he's got a great business. So stuff like that, I think it's trying to innovate or be too crazy with it is where you end up with a bunch of failures. And I know some people do that great, but I don't know, not all of us are that smart. So I say just kind of copy and tweak a little bit. And it's an easier framework to make sure you're definitely going to succeed.
Right. Was there any apprehension being so closely tied to one specific platform like LinkedIn?
Yeah, that is definitely apprehension there. And that still honestly scares me. That's like my only, it's like the only thing that like ever keeps me up at night. And I've just had to kind of learn to accept it. Like any business I've found is going to have some sort of weakness in there, whether that's industry disruption or platform disruption. And for us, it's that, you know, LinkedIn could tighten or change things up. And so we've kind of got, I did like a risk mitigation plan of, okay, what's if LinkedIn decides to change this on their platform, this is how we're going to react. If we somehow crazy got a cease and desist, then like, this is our exit plan. Like, you know, it's kind of have to accept those risks. Like, they are a nature of the business. So maybe someday I'm just going to have to shut down overnight, and that would totally suck. But for right now, you know, we're trying to do it well, and we're trying to build the business so it can generate cash flow in the short term, and not just try to, you know, build a, for some big sale or exit someday.
Great attitude. Great attitude. And I mean, with the name Lead Cookie, obviously you can maneuver a whole bunch of different ways. So when you started Lead Cookie, were you yet aware of that biggest failure, the fact of tying your services too close to yourself? Like, I guess the question is, how long did it take you before you could outsource or like hire somebody to do the service for you?
Yeah. So this was pretty, this was again, one of the reasons I actually chose it, because it was completely obvious to me that I could definitely get 90% of this off my plate right away. And so literally within like the first few weeks, I've had a guy that has worked with me on my team. His name's Jeff, and he has kind of basically been working with me full time for years, even while I've been consulting. And so literally right off the gate, I was like, hey, here's our first customer. I'm going to train you how to do this, and you're going to start doing this, and I'll just handle the strategy. So literally within like weeks, I was out of the operations of actually like sending connection requests or messages or anything like that. So that was phase one. And then like literally the first 5 months, I was still doing all client strategy, but I was very much trying to document it and make sure I set it up in a way that it was simple enough. So I literally built entire sales scripts on like, here's how to do a sales call. I built onboarding documents, like here's the questions you ask. This is the flow you take someone through on an onboarding document. Here's our framework of scripts. Like, this is how you do everything. And then when we hired our first salesperson, who's basically, he is the salesperson who closes the deals and he also does the account strategy, I was able, you know, it took me from basically, you know, early November when we hired him up until the start of January to really get him out on his own. But I mean, literally, like at that point, he had shadowed for a month and a half. He had done some of these on his own. And within a month and a half of training, I was finally able to get the strategy completely off to him. So it was completely separated from me. So it still took time, but I had that. I knew from the beginning that it was going to be possible. And I just built and documented everything I could along the way. So that way, when I started training and bringing him on, it was easy to give that over to him. And I mean, he had an entire playbook of scripts and frameworks to work with to set him up for success. I wasn't just kind of throwing him into the mix without any sort of defined process. I was really intentional about setting him up with everything he needed to just walk through a framework, go through this checklist, and that is how you do it. And there's, you know, some strategy that he had to learn, but was able to get pretty well ramped up on everything else on rather quickly.
In your previous businesses, did you have as many sort of SOPs, written processes?
No, this was never before. I mean, I had definitely in the package one, we started creating them, and then everything just kind of crumbled and we stopped. In my previous agency, we had none. There was nothing documented at all. And then, you know, I've heard from a lot of people, and I've read books on this, that the idea is that even there's a line between like documenting too early when you're just going to change everything in a few months. And then there's, you know, a point where you need to start documenting and actually putting that time in each week, because you just write one process a week and it compounds over time. And one of my advisors was actually Alex McClafferty of WP Curve. And his whole thing was like, don't write processes for the first 3 months. This is kind of like your shakeout period, is what he called it. And everything's going to break. Everything's going to break. It's all going to change. And that was very true. Literally all the software tools we used, all of our workflows, we just had to rebuild multiple times in those first few months because everything just kept breaking and not working. But then whenever we finally got something working, it was like, okay, and we're about to hire someone. And so right around when you start hiring or needing to train other people, that's when it's really a good motivator to start documenting those processes. And so every time we were hiring new people, we just built more processes. But yeah, short answer is no, I never had gotten that serious about it in the past.
Okay. Good. The way you were talking about it, I was like, man, this guy just thinks in processes.
That is a new occurrence.
So just for the nitty gritty of it, process to you would be a checklist on Google Docs, something give or take?
Yeah. So the way we have it running right now, and we'll, again, where this is all still like optimized and growing, but the way it started is we have a Trello board that we have called like our Lead Cookie playbook. And there's columns for sales, marketing, finance, admin, service delivery, there's HR and hiring. And with each one of those, there's cards, and each card is linked to a Google Doc, which is its own process. So that's like our workflow. I know other people, they do like Google sites, like internal sites and stuff like that. We did this kind of just Trello board where we can add all these Google Docs to it. We might move away from that someday to something else. We're starting to move from Trello to Asana. So it could change in format, but right now that's kind of what it looks like. It's typically a Google Doc that describes how we do something. We also do a lot of screen shares to just kind of record or walk through things for someone as well. But it just kind of over time grows into this knowledge base of all these different things that are useful for other people to know.
Nice. In there, you mentioned an advisor. How key or how big of a part has advisors, coaches, consultants played in the growth?
This was insanely valuable. So again, I worked with Alex McClafferty, who is one of the co-founders of WP Curve with Dan Norris. And this was just crucial. One thing, so I my first business I had was a video agency. And I started this when I was 19. And by the time we were 23, we had designed my corporate conferences for Hyundai and Walmart and Telemundo and Fidelity Investments and these really, really big companies. We had gotten to work on these huge productions. And as I looked back at that, you know, I was like, wow, like why did that succeed so much? And I've been struggling these past few years. And I realized a big part of it is because at that time, I was this college kid and I would just use, I would literally kind of play the college kid card and to just go talk to really big people in the city and get their advice all the time. I did that partially as a way to like get in the door and network and make sales, but also I had tons of advisors and people around me constantly giving me feedback and help on my business. And I realized in this like pit between my first agency I ever ran and all these failed pieces and then Lead Cookies, I was like, I don't have any mentors anymore. I don't have any advisors that I'm actually looking up to or who give me direct feedback on my situation and my business. And so whenever I decided that this was ready to go, I reached out to Alex, who I had known. I'd known Alex, you know, had not very closely, but as an acquaintance since prior to even WP Curve forming. And we had talked about doing some advising before, but I was just like, I don't want to pay for this right now. And then whenever this started, I was like, yes, this is it. I'm ready to do this. I'm going to put money behind it and we're going to make this work. And it was incredible. We met every single week and I literally, the business would not be where it is today without him. I would have made tons of mistakes or completely bombed or tanked or something or just gotten down. And he definitely taught me so much. And I just felt like I leveled up as an entrepreneur in the time of working with him. So I would definitely say, you know, that it is crucial to have an advisor or a coach or someone like that in front of you helping you along the way.
So if I don't know an Alex McClafferty from prior, do you have any advice on how one goes about finding an advisor that is as effective as Alex was to you?
Yeah, my whole philosophy on this is to find someone who has done exactly what you want to do or like done a similar business model or taken a similar path. So if you want to start a podcast, then find someone who has launched a podcast and built a great business around that. For me, I was launching a productized service and Alex had built WP Curve. He had a ton of experience in productized services. And so this was like a perfect angle, you know, someone who was very similar to, you know, what I was looking to do. So that's kind of my whole philosophy on it is don't just go to someone who is kind of a coach overall, but try to go to someone who has been down the route that you're wanting to go. There's definitely a place for coaches in the bigger picture of things, but I think in that intro stages of a business, having someone who's not drastically far ahead of you, you know, you don't want, you know, like someone who's like Facebook or Google or just massively far ahead, but someone who's, you know, a couple years ahead of you and has been down the path, that they can just guide you from so many mistakes that you'll make in those early days.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm glad you clarified the people just a couple steps ahead of you, because you're right. If you asked somebody how to set up something and they worked for Facebook, they'd be like, well, just hire like 300 people, put them in that building and let them sort it out.
Yeah.
It doesn't really help you.
Yep. So it's got to have it. Someone just like, there's got to be that realistic connect where they've been like, they can tell you, they're like, I remember when I was at that point and it was terrible and this is what we did. And like, it's, you know, you can just, it just helps because you can go back to his story and draw those parallels and everything.
And so within this growth that you've found, there's two things I guess I want to cover. One thing I'd like to know is if you are, the plan to get to grow further is to sort of expand services out, or Is it to go sort of narrower? And then I want to know the idea behind this guarantee. Because this guarantee is staring me in the face right now, because I have your LinkedIn page open and you have this bright red banner that says guaranteed for 30 days or your money back for lead cookie.
Yeah. So I guess the first piece on expansion there is that right now the plan is to not expand to any more services and just keep scaling and doing what we're doing. I mean, literally our market is anyone who is selling B2B on LinkedIn with over a $10,000 customer lifetime value and a good value proposition. Like, that seems really broad, but that's like, we can help a lot of people. We have software clients, we have consulting firms, we have marketing agencies, we have coaches on here. We've got a whole wide breadth of people that, as long as they have the high enough of LTV and like a good value proposition, we can plug them into our framework and it works well. So our kind of initial thoughts there is that, yeah, I don't want to expand the services because I think we can just keep doing the same thing for years and years. I look at what Russ Perry has done with Design Pickle, and they're like, you know, 3 or 4 years into their service, and they're just now launching like a second tier of their service. Like, they literally never changed it. So that is what I ideally would want. But I do recognize, again, being built on LinkedIn, there is risk of, you know, the platform changing, our tactics becoming less effective, or them changing restrictions on the amount of connection requests or just anything like that. So there's some inherent risks. So I haven't totally ruled out someday adding alternative services or adding different pieces to it, but short term, definitely not planning on anything right there.
Nice. So before we get to the guarantee now, so your ideal client, I love the clarity, the precision of you knowing your client. They're in B2B, so they sell business to business. A $10,000 lifetime value minimum of their customer you're trying to acquire, and a good value proposition. What's an example of a good value proposition?
So really good value proposition is typically, again, it all kind of varies, but that's a very subjective thing that we constantly have to evaluate. But vertically niched businesses do really well for us if we can say, hey, you're looking to go after the franchising industry, or you're looking going after manufacturing industry, or you're looking to go after the roofing companies. Like, if you've got a very specific vertical niche, that is really strong for us. The other thing is just, you know, when people are sometimes it's not always the vertical niche. Maybe they have a horizontal niche, or they work within specific departments. We've got like design thinking consultants where it's not vertical, but it's catchy enough that they are able to get in and like they're able to support and help there. So it's really just having someone that's different. If someone comes to us and they're a generalist, like, hey, we develop apps for Fortune 500 companies. It's like, cool. So does everyone else. So like, that doesn't work well. Or if they're a digital marketing agency where they say, we do SEO and pay-per-click for anybody, like, that's not going to work for us. So we need like some sort of niche or defined value proposition is really important for us to have in an ideal customer.
So if a digital marketing agency did SEO and PPC for a chiropractor?
Yeah, in that case, then we are onto something good, and like, they've actually got case studies and marketing materials to back that up, and it's not just kind of like, oh, we've done one chiropractor and we're going to do this. Like, if we can actually kind of back that up with some real marketing materials, then that then becomes a great example. Like, we've got one like that who's focusing on like pediatric like hospitals and general practitioners right now. And so like, that's an ideal of a good customer.
Right. So even if somebody didn't want to use your service, that's why I wanted to go over this, because I think it's so invaluable just as a business having that good value proposition as you describe it. Because I mean, you do, like, you know your customer and you know exactly what you can do. And people like you, what you have, you help B2B sales teams generate leads on LinkedIn through Done For You Prospecting.
Yeah. And this is like this interesting thing about this. And this has been one of the coolest things to see is that, so if you think about this, I think at this point we've run like 70 LinkedIn campaigns. We use the exact same framework of scripts to send the messages, the whole drip sequence, the exact same framework of messages for the LinkedIn copy and the taglines. But you have people on there who will get 50 responses in a day, and you have people on there who will literally not get a lead all month. And the difference is completely not in the tactic. We're doing the exact same thing, but the difference is in their value proposition and what they're offering and who they're offering that to. So if you just like look at it, like, we are just this framework, and whatever their value proposition is a multiplier that comes up against our framework. And if they have a good value proposition, they're going to see great results in the back end. If they have a bad value proposition, they're going to see terrible results on the back end. So it's just been an interesting concept in just like business and marketing to see this when you apply the exact same thing to so many different types of businesses.
When the only variable is really the value proposition.
Yep. The only variable is who, what the business we're plugging into it.
So now the guarantee. What brought on this guarantee for a service-based business?
Yeah. So this was a fundamental belief that I had whenever we started the company. But basically, I told you I was doing consulting before this. And my consulting, what I would do is I would do these things called sales teardowns and strategy blueprints. I still do occasionally. Do these where I would just basically take a look at an agency or a consulting company, and I would give them all their my insights and feedback for their business. And basically the whole angle was saying, look, you're going to have people that go try to sell you inbound marketing, try to sell you cold email campaigns. They're going to try to sell you all these different things. But you as a business owner, you need someone to look holistically at your business and tell you what tactics you should actually really be using. Or if your value proposition sucks, or like what's your, if your sales material or your sales process is broken, like you need someone to give you that feedback. And so that's what I was doing. And I was doing this kind of holistic look at these businesses. And that's what my consulting was for years. And so I always got really annoyed. And like, I literally like wrote articles about like tactics, people who would just sell tactics. And like, you know, the people out there who are like, yeah, blogging is the cure for everything. And so I'm going to sell you blogging. And it's like, well, like that's actually just one tactic in a lot of different things you can do to get clients for your business. So that's kind of like the background and the mentality I was coming from into this business. So I was like, okay, I'm about to launch a tactic business, which is like counter to everything that I've been preaching and writing about for years. And so the only way that I can ethically feel right doing this is if I offer a money back guarantee and we only sell this to people that it's going to work for. And basically that money back guarantee forces us to only sell it to people that it's going to work for. So we turn away so many customers. Literally, we got 41 leads this past week. We'll probably book 7 of those into actual phone calls, and we'll probably turn 4 of those away and sign 3 of them. Because everyone else, we're basically saying like your value proposition isn't a right fit. Your customer lifetime value isn't large enough where you're going to get an ROI, or just for any number of reasons, it's just not a right fit. And so that whole guarantee is designed to basically make us only sell people that we're going to succeed for. Because if we sign someone and we fail, we have to refund their money, and we just wasted a ton of time and energy that we're now not getting paid for. So that's kind of where it came from. And like, it's, as you can tell, I'm like pretty passionate and rooted about this. It's like fundamental. So
yeah, you are. And it's good. But I'm wondering if, because it's unusual to do this, like do any prospects take this like offensively?
It's a really odd thing. When you tell someone that you're not going to work with them, like they want to work with you more. It's really weird. And so we do have people who are like, I don't think this is the right fit. And like they go and they jump over like leaps and bounds to like try to make things work, which is cool. I mean, ultimately, like in a lot of cases, what we have had several clients do is we're like, hey, this isn't going to be right because you don't have a vertical niche. But they're like, oh, well, actually, I have all these roofing clients. What if I build a whole like micro website and I do a brand and we niche my profile and we like build all the marketing materials to support this? And so we literally have clients who go through those bounds to build these separate brands that we can do this outreach under, which is totally awesome. And they make it work. But, you know, in other cases, you know, they just kind of understand it and accept it and appreciate us for turning them away. And then sometimes they even refer us to others. So,
wow. I now really want to work with you. So is this something that like, so when you having that roofer as an example, or the roofing company, is this something you provide to prospects that aren't fitting? Like, do you tell them why and like what you were looking for?
Yeah, there's typically a few criteria that, well, you know, we do tell them why. And so like honestly, when we tell them their value proposition isn't good enough, like that's typically the like hardest one for them to stomach at times. But sometimes it's also like their niche is too small. So you can also be too niched where if you only have, you know, 500 target customers because you're really, really tightly focused, then that also isn't going to good fit because we're kind of mass outreach. So we would burn through 500 customers in the first month, and then, you know, we wouldn't have anything else to do for you. So we also have that case sometimes where they're too focused, which is good for them, but it's just not an ideal fit for our service. Or people that are geographically focused. Typically, if you're only targeted in like the Denver area, then, you know, we're going to run out of prospects really quickly because there's just only so many people that live in Denver that work in this specific job title that you're looking for. So there's a handful of those number of things that definitely kind of weed them out, and then value proposition is just one of them. So that's typically the hardest one for them to stomach, though, when we turn that one away.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And yeah, I mean, if you are focused on Denver, then you might be able to provide the leads for the first 30 days, but past the guarantee. But then beyond that, you're kind of out of luck.
Yep, exactly.
All right, Jake, this has been an absolute blast, man. I really appreciate you stopping by and sharing with us. So we've got to talk about LeadCookie. You have LeadCookie and you have an amazing personal website and blog. Could you now specifically tell the listener what LeadCookie is, what it could do for them, where to find it, and then about this personal blog?
Yeah, so LeadCookie is a done-for-you LinkedIn prospecting service where basically we're going to manage your LinkedIn profile and we're going to do outreach and start warm conversations between you and your ideal customers. So basically, we take over your account, we send out connection requests, we drip people messages, and as a result, we start out a lot of warm conversations that we basically hand over to you to kind of nurture, book phone calls, and eventually turn into deals. So basically done for you LinkedIn prospecting.
That's awesome.
So that's LeadCookie. And again, leadcookie.com is the website for that one. And then, yes, I do a lot of blogging and writing. So at jake-jorgevin.com. And that's, you know, I put a ton of stuff on there. Just I've written for years about sales and business development for agencies and consultants. And these days I'm writing a lot of more higher level stuff on marketing and growing and scaling a business and validating value propositions and outreach. So just all these things that I'm learning from LeadCookie. I'm a big believer that when you write and share stuff, you learn more of it yourself. So I put a ton of stuff out there and I write these pretty massive articles every week, all just about sales, marketing, and business development.
And that is at jake-jorgevin.com. So jake-jorgevan.com. But I'll link to that in the show notes for you, as well as LeadCookie. Well, I'm going to look up, I believe it was Hub Snacks you talked about.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great new business, productized service ramping up. Ian could even be another good guest for this show. So he's rocking along and scaling really quickly with that one.
Nice. Design Pickle, he was on the show when he first started. I think it was like a month into it or something, or 2 months into it. So that's cool. And then also I'll track down Alex McClafferty's personal site as well for you. So you can check out all of it on there when you're done walking, jogging, working at it out, whatever it is you're doing. All right, Jake, I'm really glad that I was introduced to you and I got to have you on the show. Thanks so much for stopping by, man, and just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome to watch.
Thanks for having me on here, John.
All right, we made it. We made it to my favorite part of the show. It's the part where we get to go back. We get to go together. We get to go back through the conversation and we get to find that one thing that Jake said. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I underestimated the inherent knowledge that I brought that I couldn't train anyone to do what I was proposing that we were going to do, you know, unless I was going to hire someone really expensive and then it just wouldn't have been a cost-effective service to sell.
And that's the hack. Jake. I love this. And maybe it's cheating a bit on my part because it is clearly, you said, the greatest mistake that you made in all previous businesses. But I want to hit this home. I want to make sure that you out there listening hears this. I want to make sure that I hear this because Jake has, as we said in the intro, he's done like a lot of businesses that didn't work out the way he wanted, like a lot of us have. And now he's knocking it out of the park. And he's learned this. He underestimated the inherent sort of skills that he had and the value in what he knew personally when he was trying to start a new business. And therefore, he could not train somebody to take his place and to do this service for him. Or he would have to hire somebody, as he says, that's really, really expensive, therefore making the business not profitable, therefore not feasible. It's not funny. I was going to say it's funny how, I mean, Jake went through a huge portion of his life trying things that didn't work. And now he knows what the problem was. And we all know what the problem was. And it's so simple. When you think of it this way, and when you look back on it, it's so simple. When you're stuck in it yourself, it's hard. If you're struggling right now with scaling your business, your service-based business? Is it this? Is this the problem? Is it the fact that you have too much inherent skill and you cannot hire it out at the right price? Whether you're looking for the next idea to start or you're looking to try and figure out why it's not working in your business, remember Jake's words, because they'll save you a lot of time and a lot of money. Jake, thank you so very, very much. All right, all right, all right. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. We got some good links for you. The Hubsnacks gets some Alex McClafferty. Jake Jorgeman, his blog. Head over there, check it out. There's some amazing reads over there. He's been going at it for a couple of years, I think, and he knows how to write in a really informative sort of how-to way in very useful tactics and skills for mostly consultants, I think, but for really growing any type of business. And leadcookie.com is the main business Jake is now scaling. Head over there and check it out. It's been fun. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really, truly, truly do appreciate it. I don't know. Let's do this again sometime soon, shall we? All right. Until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.